Oh, du lieber Augustin, Augustin, Augustin. Oh, du lieber Augustin, Augustin.
Did he sing about 700 years ago in Central Europe
Augustin,
by a minstrel?
Oh, du lieber Augustin,
who was trying to cheer the people in so much misery, hopelessness. The song goes about, oh my dearest Augustine, everything is gone. Your money is gone. Your girl is gone. Everything is gone.
Order in court. Be seated.
I hope you judges don't mind my notes here, no? I have to refer to... Thank you. I see. You want to speak first. Yes, 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 I am him. I am Avatar. What's that, Your Honor? Yes, I apologize. You want me to explain, first of all, why I say I'm guilty of many crimes? Yes, I have committed these crimes, and you and your court know nothing about them. These were crimes committed during war. Yes, Your Honor, I will answer the court's question. I insist on conducting my own defense because lawyers cannot really understand my motives. All right, all right. Yes, Your Honor, I will come to the point just as quickly as I can. When I gave myself up, 7 months or so ago, the man who talked to me had a British accent, a soldier in camouflage with a blue beret. He asked me who I was, what my name was. I said only that I was a war criminal. Why, Your Honor? Why should I have answered this United Nations soldier? Who was he? Just because he had on a uniform did not make him... And anyway, what was he doing in my country? I never asked for soldiers to keep the peace. Our internal struggle was not anyone else's business. But I went to the peacekeepers in the end for a good reason. I cannot continue to give testimony voluntarily when the court keeps interrupting me. Either let me tell my own story in my own way, or I shall remain mute for the rest of this trial, and you can hold me in contempt for all you want. That is immaterial to me. Don't forget that I am here because I feel in need of your judgment. So, you will allow me a certain latitude, as you call it. Fine. I told the UN peacekeeper to take me to Holland for trial at the International War Crimes Tribunal. He wanted to know why. I would not answer. I answer only to judges, not to soldiers. Had I not been so depressed already, this would have sounded like a farce to me. Avatar calling himself a war criminal? An ethnic cleanser? A monster who killed women and children? That, no doubt, was this soldier's perception as he locked me up. Many times, they said I should either confess or they would have to let me go. Incriminating oneself, it seems, is not the rule in a civil war. It is now the rule to deny everything, even when caught holding the smoking gun, and witnesses testifying, yes, that man killed this man here. In The Hague, your chief prosecutor, a woman from Canada, I heard, she tried to interrogate me. I said I had a story to tell, but I did not want to have my confession recorded, not before I stood before all the judges. Now, I have had time to reflect on my crimes, and here I am.
Revista. Hold,
Кожурику мене чи мене ціль.
Там він. Молодці.
With the court's indulgence, I would like to go back a few years and draw a picture of the village where I was born. I studied languages and communications in our city later. Will the court be interested in this? I consider this essential information. My village in the hills was poor. The peasants trying to grow food on hardscrabble land. It was mostly sheep and goats we raised, and chickens, of course, some geese. But those peasants raising animals were doing better. Not so my family. I remember being always hungry. My parents were also peasants. My father said this would not be a good life for me and my sister Vila. I soon showed early promise of high intelligence, everyone said. So my father wanted me to become somebody, not just another peasant. In this village were us and them. Ethnically speaking. Oh, both factions got along as a rule. May I have a drink of water? Us and them. Not very clear, is it? But the peasants in my village were neighbors who depended on one another. Someone would find some bit of beef or pork and make chavapchichi. And usually, several families shared in the feast, whether they were of the same ethnic group and religion or not. It's no matter. Oh, I see. What are chavapchichi? Chavapchichi are what you might call meatballs in the shape of a fat finger. But the spices, the flavor, the garlic. And then the shlivovica would flow. For someone always had a few bottles of homemade stashed away. Plum spirit. Clear. No sweetness. Only the aroma of ripe plums. We'd get drunk on that stuff. All of us. And although our native dialect was different from that of our neighbor next door, again, no matter. We did not hate one another, despite our ethnic imbalance. There were old prejudices, but we held them in check. We could understand them. They understood us. Our common enemy in those days was drought, flood, earthquakes, that kind of natural disaster, and we battled them together. As long as my father could remember, and his father, our family had owned this small parcel of land. Our neighbors were from a different ethnic group, and they went to a different church, but so what? This was our communal land, and we needed to share the crops, so we did. What's that, Your Honor? I can't seem to remember. Let me tell you about Radik, one of them. He was my own age, also a peasant's son, also very bright and destined for a better life. What a dashing figure he cut. Isn't that a good British expression? With his black, wild hair, his Roman nose, his dark skin. Anyway, he was a born heartbreaker, and lean, with muscles, and he could dance all night. Ah, but, well, maybe so could I. We were inseparable as we went hiking, making plans for the time when we would exchange our short pants for long ones. We never liked to wear native costume. We would see it as dressing up for the tourists. We had pride. Radek and I liked wearing blue jeans, and so did all our young men in the old days. Some of our people took the train to Trieste, just over the border in Italy, and bought blue jeans on the cheap and smuggled them back across the border. The border guards searched the smuggler's luggage, but if you asked one of the young American hippies on the train to stuff the Italian jeans into their backpacks, you'd be home free. Americans were never searched. Of course, later, when our communist government collapsed, these kind of tricks were no longer necessary, so... About that collapse. Some said the old marshal enforced our peaceful coexistence, but I think it was more of our own free will to get along. Yes, I know. I am getting to my story. Land ownership among my people is always disputed, especially between various ethnic factions, and the word relocation suddenly became a political issue. People were ordered to move, to leave their homes and farms behind, just like that. You in the West called this ethnic cleansing. Prosecutor, you tell me that what I'm saying is not relevant to this court case? I disagree. To gain an insight into the way we were, how we lived, I need to tell you. All right. Thank you. All that happened to our country also happened to the friendship between Radik and myself. We were inseparable. And then We swore a blood oath to remain friends forever and ever and 3 days, as we say in our village when we really mean forever. It was a solemn oath of brotherhood. What we did not know then was that we were marked as victims, both of us. You could call it destiny or fate. No. Thank you, Your Honor. I feel all right. I want to continue. Radik and I were drafted into the National Army when our country was still a whole nation, and we served together for some time. But then, I guess I wanted out, and Radik wanted to be a soldier, at least for a while. So we talked about his decision. Our first disagreements came then, when I asked him, "Radik, have you forgotten our pledge?" We almost came to blows then. He said, "Listen, what we said as boys has changed now. I like the military, I like the discipline, and the drinking, and the girls, and that." He just grinned. What really offended me was that Radik liked carrying weapons such as that AK-47, finger always near the trigger. Then the old marshal died. And for a while, our people lived side by side, as always. But after I was discharged from the armed forces, I visited our village and found there was suddenly a rift between friends, between neighbors, those who belonged to different groups. It was less noticeable in the city where I went to university, but in the country, I discovered that my parents no longer spoke to Radik's parents. Nothing had really changed, I thought. But it had. Village gossip was no longer entertaining. Instead, I began to notice paranoia in my parents and the other peasants, the neighbors. It started slowly. Our ethnic group would be getting cool and distrustful of its former friends in the other groups. In our village, we had 3 ethnic groups and 3 religions as well. The day I visited my parents, my father pointed across the river to a farm. "You know, Dragomir, how he and I would share food and drink and help one another. Last week, I found a little piglet running around in our yard and then, well, somehow it died and ended up in our kitchen." My father grinned. "So, you invited him over for a feast, right?"
When I went over to get him, he looked at me and said, "What do you want?" "Well," I told him with a grin, "we need help to eat some roast piglet." He looked really angry, and he shouted, "Where did you get that pig? You, who has nothing. You, who always ate at our table." Dragomir continued to shout at me. I couldn't say much. I didn't understand his hostility. Then he told me to get off his land. So I tried once more. Look, Dragomir, we've been friends for so long. Come with me and have a drink. Let's get drunk and forget about whatever, whatever. And then my father, whom I had never seen crying, he started to cry silently. Dragomir, he slapped me, and I hit him back. And now, I asked my father, now Dragomir and I are enemies. I heard he wants to drive your mother and me out of the village. He wants us relocated. I heard he and his friends claim traditional ethnic rights for this valley, as if one ethnic group could own a piece of land. I mean, land is there for all to share, no? Dragomir doesn't see it this way. And you, father, I ask, what about you? I think Dragomir listens too much to some high-up people who tell him his ethnic group has prior rights here. And you hate Dragomir as well, father? I asked. He sighed and nodded slowly. How can I respect someone who won't eat and drink with me any longer and wants to evict us? For me, and I was now an outsider, a university student. For me, it was tragic. My parents did not listen to me, of course. The opinion of young sons is not regarded highly in our country. And my younger sister, Vila, she is 5 years younger. Vila had changed, too, from being a happy young girl doing her farm chores to a suspicious... sister Vila. What's that, Your Honor? I can't seem to remember. What's that, Your Honor? What's that, Your Honor? I can't seem to remember. Vila. I'm sorry. May I have a moment? It's just that... Just... But let me tell you about her. She... What's that? Is this relevant to... But of course it is relevant! All right, I see. You want me to be short. No, concise, as you say. Vila, in one word, was a little saint to me. She touched everyone she met. I mean touched in a special way. She charmed them. She was kind, she was... Your Honor, if you could have heard her friends, seen the jealousy among her schoolmates. You see, Vila was a good person, and I loved her. I also protected her from the boys because she was so pretty. She and I, well, we considered ourselves enlightened, different from the others. I cannot explain that, Your Honor.
I have always been a rebel, I suppose. A rebel against the established way of doing things. And Vila, she and I often sat together. She was only 5 years younger. And so bright. So bright. She had flaxen hair and wore it in two braids. Her face was so open before the troubles began. And then it slowly closed up. And with this, she lost some of her prettiness. How is that saying? After the age of 30, your face reflects what you have become? That's what happened to Vila. One day, she saw an old friend. She thought for a moment that Radik was still her friend. But she was so wrong. Your Honor, I want to apologize. Thank you. It will not happen again. So, we would sometimes discuss our terrible country, Vila and I. She and I wanted no part of the blood feud, the hatred around us. We wanted to live clean lives, simple, productive, all the good things. I mean the spiritual values, not material goods. What happened, Your Honor, was the opposite. And this, I suppose, is why I am standing here in front of you, trying to explain. I only wish Vila were here too. So she could explain how we tried to ignore the killings, the refugees, ignore the soldiers who think only of their thirsty throats and their how can I say that? Their pricks! I am sorry if I have offended the two ladies in this courtroom. Old-fashioned courtesy for women, gone in this crime of a war. I remember the village harvest times well. Peasants know how to celebrate the time when the grain and the hay had been cut, dried, and stored. Apples and plums, especially those for the shlivovica, taken off the trees, cherries, and apricots, cooked and bottled. For days, we would get drunk and dance. Some of us would fight over a girl, but then make up again. I want you to realize that all this is gone now. What we have seen is war among friends. And that's what a civil war is. Strange, is it not, to think of war as crime? War was, so we were taught, something noble. When one nation rose against the aggression of another. Vila and I, one day in the capital of our new ethnic country, we made plans to leave, to abandon our parents to whom we could no longer talk sense. Well, they too had started to hate their neighbors and friends, those who belonged to other groups. They were afraid. Radik and I, we were inseparable friends. Well, as long as it lasted. As long as we were together before we separated, he being a soldier, I a university student. I mean, soldiers and students can be friends, we thought. And we said so to one another when he went his way and I mine. That was our hope. Had it not been for this crime of a war, we would have stayed friends forever. And don't forget the 3 days to make it really forever. May I quote Your Honor, without being thought facetious. A local joke from my country. A fake police report. Widow X was almost killed by a speeding automobile early this morning as it careered out of control and hit the front steps of her house, had she not, against all expectations, stayed home that morning. Well, not very funny, I admit. But it makes a point. Unless certain factors come together at the same time, coincidentally or by design, who knows? A disaster will not occur. Often only a couple of seconds will be enough to prevent a tragedy. I'm sorry, Your Honor. I don't... Well, sometimes my memory... I know, Your Honor, you would prefer that I get on with my confession rather than to philosophize. You want to hear of my crimes. Give me one more minute to quote from a remarkable book published in 1995, a copy I was able to read in captivity. It's called The Poverty of Postmodernism, and its first sentence hit me as being worthy here in this courtroom. It is a conceit of postmodernity, that it stands on a point of the highest morality achieved through the erosion of all previous moral institutions. The author, Professor John O'Neill, says, "We are wholly ruled by prejudice and politics, while believing that never before has the human mind been more open, nor the human community more closed to the hearts of men and women." We are no longer living according to the precepts of universal knowledge, politics, or morality. From my vantage point, as someone caught up in this universal lack of knowledge, politics, and morality in my former country, our knowledge and morality has disintegrated into what serves our special interests. You see, when I surrendered voluntarily, I had been operating as an independent and highly effective sniper. I was dressed like one of the opposing army's cowboys, as we called them. Those snipers in camouflage uniform who scorn flak jackets, who wear bandanas around their heads, and who are out of step with their own troops. They were loose cannons. I was a civilian who wore the army fatigues of the invaders. I also wore a red bandana, disguised my face with war paint, and carried an assassin's long rifle. I had become a sniper, an ethnic assassin with protective coloration, roaming undetected among these cowboys, posing as one of them, speaking their language, carrying stolen ID from one of their snipers whom I had killed and whose rifle I used. My preferred nickname since childhood, now also my nom de guerre, was Avatar. This Hindu term meaning a superhuman. My real name no longer belongs to me. I kept track of how many men I had killed, most with a headshot. Who were these victims? There is a Central European term for rogue soldiers, Soldateska. It is used by civilians in contempt for soldiers who loot and rape. In medieval times, it was commonplace to see soldiers operating as criminals. Then those practices slowly disappeared, and soldiers were fighting more or less to win a war, not to enrich themselves, to rape and torture their victims. I say, more or less. But in the 1990s, such temporary restraints were gone. And, what's that, Your Honor? You want to know how many I killed? First, let me say why I did what I did. A year or so ago, in spring, everything there happens in spring with the warmer weather, Vila and I decided to return and evacuate our parents from the village and escort them to safety to the capital. We had heard from friends that there were plans by the Soldateska to set our village on fire and drive out our people. We arrived just too late. In hiding, we saw houses burning, the Soldateska setting fire to them, herding out old people, women, and children. Our young men, of course, were either held in makeshift camps by them, or they had gone to ground, as we had. Then Vila saw our parents in front of our old burning farmhouse. Three soldiers pushed them along, and then, as I looked through my binoculars, I saw my old friend, Redik, obviously in command of the operation. I said to Vila, "Look, there's Redik." Before I could react, Vila had left our hiding place and ran towards Redik's Soldateska, shouting, "Redik! Redik! This is Vila! These are our parents! Stop! Let them go!" I wanted to run after her. I wanted to talk some sense to Redik. I hesitated too long, and then it was too late. I was unarmed. I never thought Redik would, but he did. I did nothing! 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 I will never forget Radik's face as Vila reached him. He looked at her as if she were a stranger, turned his back on her, gave a command to some soldiers, and walked away. Vila was thrown on the ground, and while I watched, she was raped by three soldiers until Redik held up his hand, came to her, and shot her in the head with a handgun. Why? Why, Vila? Why, Redik? Why? My parents and many of the other villagers were ordered to leave, walking in a slow trek. Other villagers who supported the invaders stayed behind. They cheered and jeered. The Soldateska decided to bivouac for the night, drinking and carousing. Radek kept his distance. bedding down behind a half-burned retaining wall. Was he thinking about how he killed his best friend's sister? After midnight, I crawled through the rubble of our house until I found a kitchen knife. And with that between my teeth, I used the moonless night to get closer and closer to Retic, who was sitting up against the retaining wall, smoking. During my time in the armed forces, we had learned all kinds of things. One of them was how to stalk an enemy. I stalked Retic, and after some time, I reached the other side of the low wall. I was close to doing what was essential. I reached across the wall, grabbed his hair, and held the kitchen knife against his throat. Retic never moved. "Yes," I whispered in his ear. "Your friend Avatar is here. No, don't talk. There are no lies that will prevent me from doing this. You killed Vila. I will kill you." And then I did it. I will spare you the details. I got away. The Zoldateska were drunk and snoring, and the sentries were asleep. And that, Your Honor, is how I became a sniper. Killing Retic, that was revenge. But then I saw what the snipers were doing to my people. They liked shooting unarmed civilians. Civilians don't shoot back. Deciding to kill snipers was an easy decision. Snipers are always loners, hunters, and everybody, even the Zoldateska, was afraid of them. This fear served me well as I started killing snipers. I became virtually invisible while I stalked my victims. No one ever found out who my victims really were. I became an outlaw and lived like one. I would make a kill and drift away. I foraged for food like everyone else. I must have smelled, oh yes. The peacekeeper to whom I gave myself up, the first thing he said was, "Hey, buddy, I think you need a shower." Even war criminals must smell nice, no? I remembered those stories of the Second World War about German soldiers speaking fluent American English, putting on U.S. Army uniforms and infiltrating enemy lines posing as Americans. Their accent, to fool American soldiers, needed to be perfect. In my case, my accent was perfect, and I was able to pretend to be one of the cowboys. These were the elite commandos of the invading troops, all of them hard-line ethnic cleansers. And I, their intended victim, had become one of them. My infiltration had been successful. I pretended to have killed many civilians, people like myself, but all the sniper kills I claimed were fraudulent, of course. My fellow snipers might see me hiding in rubble or bushes, aiming my long-range rifle at city squares or village squares. So what? They saw a buddy. My claims were never doubted, or I would not stand here before you. My real victims, other rogue snipers, were always alone, always hiding, but not from a buddy sniper, so they became easy targets. No one suspected. When an officer checked on me occasionally, I always had one answer. "On special assignment," pointing to my rifle. I had carved an X on the wooden stock for every sniper I had dispatched, saying, "That's how many I did." It always worked. To get back to that day, I had spotted yet another sniper up ahead, at an easy distance for a kill. He seemed to be alone. He was squatting. I aimed at the red bandana and squeezed the trigger. He fell over. I was sure I had a hit. But then I heard a vehicle. This was unusual. A UN vehicle had pulled up to my latest victim. I was confused and crawled towards the small group of soldiers crowding around my victim, concentrating on hearing what they were saying. But I was still too far away. I crawled toward the group standing by the armored vehicle. All were UN soldiers. On the ground, I saw my victim. I had aimed at a red bandana. The sniper with the red bandana was a Canadian soldier. I disappeared into the underbrush. They never saw me. My last total was 49 executed, including my first victim, Radik. 49. 50. But the last one, number 50. He was a mistake. Your Honor, I cannot describe how I felt at that moment. I went into hiding to think. I threw my rifle away. I put on civilian clothes. But during my weeks in hiding, I never thought I would escape my fate. Perhaps someone would turn me in. But no one knew who Avatar was. All those dead snipers. Somebody killed them, but who? Only I knew. Living in hiding is hard enough, but living with guilt makes it worse. In my mind, I went through the questioning that would follow my detention. They would want to know everything about Avatar, what my real name was, why I did it. I thought about repeating over and over that I believed my intended victim to have been a sniper, as if that excused anything. And now, my work is done. It began badly with killing a childhood friend, and it ended with killing an innocent. But those in between, I still say they deserved to die. I wanted to live as a pacifist, but life isn't about doing what you would like. It took no time to adjust to life as a sniper. Perhaps I ought to have pointed fingers, waited for the end of the Civil War, then laid charges against Radik. Waited for the due process of the law. But how many more of us would he have killed? You people, you judges, you were not there. This, I want you to know, was our war. You sent UN troops to keep us apart and peaceful, but this was our country, our land, and our social issues were not any concern to outsiders like the peacekeepers. What gave you the right to meddle in our affairs? The hate in me was so destructive. It would have consumed me. In my 2 years in the army, I learned to shoot, was good at it. Knowing how to kill from a distance is a dangerous skill. In all these months, waiting for my trial to begin, I have been trying to justify my actions. Philosophically, I know that hate and revenge are primitive reactions. Now I have had time to think about my hate and desire for revenge. After I had killed Radek that day, I could have left it at that. I would have evened the score, wiped out his betrayal. But it did not seem enough. Radek's death did not satisfy me. They were all guilty. All those snipers. The more I killed, the more I needed to kill. One day it would end, I knew that, and I hoped it would end when I had killed so many that the moral balance had been recalibrated. It never was. I have failed. On the positive side, there are now 49 fewer killers. But how many more are there still walking around? Only a few are sharing the cells here in The Hague. On the negative side, I have become a monster. Avatar, the merciless sniper. After all these killings, I have not been able to reconcile myself to such a past. It will continue to dominate my life. Can I ever atone for what I did? In war, there is no room for atonement, for forgiveness. In the middle of the journey of our life, I came to myself in a dark wood where the straight way was lost. Dante, no? There is no solace in his cantos, not for me. I must descend into the inferno. I must suffer the heat. And perhaps such cleansing fire will purify my soul. Not to restore my innocence, for that is lost forever and ever and 3 days. Let me close my eyes so that I can sleep without dreams. Without this self-inflicted terror. I will sit down now and await your verdict. I would prefer a death sentence, swift and clean, but this is not what you judges do. You could expedite matters by turning me over to the Zolde Pesca now that they have ended their work. They would have no compunction in torturing me and executing me. But you are not about to do that, are you? Shall I now apologize profoundly and with no reservation to all my victims, without exception, that I had no right to do what I did, that I am so terribly sorry for what I have done to you? It is too late. I got lost in the woods with a stolen rifle and the memory of a broken vow. And a ravished sister. And a dream of justice. Now a nightmare. I have nothing more to say. Now you have to consider whether I am guilty and what my punishment will be.
Brother?
O God, grant forgiveness to thy servants that are asleep when thou comest to judge them that thou didst create with spotless hands.